Paul, but with Daniel, but I think we ought to give Daniel and Gene Seek a round of applause, because really, aren't they kind of representative of the American dream when you look at how they started and where they are today and what they've meant to the cattle industry? So, Daniel, thank you. He's certainly given a lot of accolades to Illumina. And I do work for Illumina now. I have the great fortune to have joined them a year ago in April. And extremely pleased to be back into the genomics field after a stint doing some other things at ABS with cloning and transgenic work. And then back into the industry for a while, and then getting back into genomics. And this is kind of where I wanted to see things go. From the USDA Meat Animal Research Center, I work with Steve Kappas and the laboratories. We developed the systems with microsatellites to develop the first genetic linkage maps. And I remember the long hours we put in basically slogging that through pretty brutally, mostly hand. No equipment other than a PCR machine and all the glassware we could buy at Walmart. So we built those maps in 18 months. So that was pretty fast, and published the first genetic linkage maps in 1994. Let's see, this thing looks a little old. There we go. I do work for Illumina, and I am a senior market development specialist now for the agrigenomics group. And Illumina, again, is another example of American success story. Started in a garage, principally, in 1998. With the first IPO in 2000, and has grown immensely over those years. We're now over 3,000 employees, 1,200 in the R&D staff, with a beautiful campus in San Diego, California. Anybody ever been there? You'd often wonder why you'd ever leave. It's a pretty stable situation. Last year, Illumina was named the smartest company by MIT Technology Review. We are a basic sequencing company, developing a lot of technology in that area. I'll talk a little bit about that. Some of the metrics: we have a market cap today of over $17 billion. And if you would check the stocks today, we're probably trading in a 170 range somewhere. When I joined Illumina a year ago, we were at 5410. It's just been an amazing ride in less than a year. Of course, that tremendous growth brings a lot of challenges. Our industry is, we basically are looking at $1.42 billion of revenues from 2013, with a projection of over $1.7 billion this year. And we service a lot of markets, okay? And agriculture and companion animals, or agrigenomics, is about a 10 to 11% market share of our company. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of the total gross revenues, what we're looking at coming from the livestock and the plant area. So one of the challenges as I joined the company was, and has evolved since my short tenure there, a little over a year now, is to promote from within, and also to go out and data mine the globe, principally the North, South, Central America region, and I share duties with Andre Egan in Europe and South Africa, and look at new ways that we can apply our technologies, so both in the plant and the animal area. So we're into market development. I'll share with you at the end of my talk a little bit about some of the areas we're pursuing, just briefly. We are global. We have offices all over the globe, and we're growing extremely rapidly in Southeast Asia area. Down in South Africa, we're seeing a lot of activity most recently. We're having some good interactions right now with Mexico and some things that are going on there. I spent over 2 hours this morning with a customer's base that's growing down there, working on some things. So not only North, South, Central America and Europe, which is basically the birthplace of all the genomics work, but we're expanding the globe with our technologies. Now, What I wanted to do at this BIF meeting was to basically celebrate the history of what we brought to the table, what this company brought to the table. And this company enabled, like Daniel talked about so eloquently, the implementation of genomics in the cattle world. And what we have done, how many of you have signed up for the chip drawing that we've advertised out there? If you go out to the registration and fill out the card and throw it in the little basket, we're giving away two drawings. Daniel, or let's see, is Matt here? Matt Spangler is going to be holding a drawing tonight and one tomorrow for two 48 sample B chip kits, principally, to be given away, one in each drawing. It has a tremendous retail value. Right, Daniel?
Yes.
He knows well, because he works this over pretty good. But to you, what that means is an opportunity to apply the technology in whatever way you want, whether it be in a research or if you're a producer, to take it home and actually do some testing with animals, work with your service provider, whether it be Zoetis, who is also represented here today, who is a customer of ours, or GeneSeq, or if you have another service provider, that would be fine. We will work with you to implement the use of that kit. So we will be giving two of those away, one tonight in a drawing. I'm not sure when, Matt, you're going to have that drawing, but then again tomorrow. Right? Very good. Very good. So make sure you get out to that table and sign up before, after the sessions, and at least get a chance. I think the retail value is pretty significant, so it's a good thing to sign up for. Now, what we have done recently, to capstone the SNP50B chip and basically celebrate it this year, we put together a timeline of the important events, and we published that up on our website. So if you go to www.illumina.com and search down through there to the agrigenomics area, and you'll be able to come to what we call our agrigenomics timeline. And what we did over the last few months is we've captured some of the key events. Now, Daniel has touched upon them, Ronnie Green has touched upon them, and some of the other talks, Steve Kappas touched on them, but I'm going to give you, up there you're going to find a little different version and a little bit of my version of history. So if we're all going to walk down memory lane today, I get to walk a little bit with it, because I remember being in the room as a graduate student of The Ohio State University with C.R. Henderson, Walt Harvey, Nate Fetchheimer, Mike Davis, who's giving a talk a couple rooms over, and I was just a lowly graduate student, and in walked a guy giving seminars, moving around the country, by the name of Morris Soller from Israel. Now, you don't know Walt Harvey, but he was a least squares person, and C.R. Henderson was the blob specialist, and he was there for a special sabbatical, so we had a great opportunity as grad students to see two giants in the genetics field working side by side, and definitely in our seminars arguing all the time. But when Morris Soller put up this slide and showed that RFLPs and Holstein cattle could be associated with some genetic trait for milk production by the mere polymorphism or the difference in one gene, I saw Walt Harvey clamp down on his pipe harder than I've ever seen anybody do. Because the idea then, as a quantitative geneticist, that a single gene could add up to that much additive genetic variation for a trait was simply just not heard of, was it? And it was not acceptable and not very palatable. However, back in my day when I started in the late 80s, the tomato paper came out and showed that there was a handful of genes that associated with the flavor and the size and the color of a tomato gene, and it gave us all hope. It basically gave us that impetus we needed to go out and take a look and say, okay, maybe there's a chance. And so there was a driver to that. I'm recounting all this because there are risk takers along the way that are very important to how we got here today and how Daniel got to start his company, how Zoetis has been able to do their company. And one of the heroes of the day, I believe, was Jim Womack at Texas A&M. Jim was basically the purveyor of the first genetic map for cattle. And I remember going to Jim's lab and mapping IGF-1 in that map, and there was only 100 markers on the bovine map at the time. 100. That's it. And we didn't even know what chromosomes were because they were little centenary groups that were a combination of bovine segments and hamster segments. So Jim Womack was really the father of the first genetic linkage map and extremely important to that development of the field. And next to him was Morris Soller coming through. And the next person that I thought made a great impact that you can find the details on our website would be Michelle Georges from Belgium. And Michelle actually was in the United States and started a company named Genmark in Salt Lake City, Utah. And Michelle was the first one to really apply the microsatellite technology. And they did that in a company called Genmark, which was later purchased by American Breeders Service in DeForest, Wisconsin. And I've known him and Rudy Fries, who was a very, very important at that same time of being able to bring fluorescent C2 hybridization to the table for the identification and isolation of certain chromosomes that identify this bovine chromosome that were in the bovine genome. And then we could hang the microsatellites on those particular chromosomes at the USDA Meat Animal Research Center with our microsatellite technology. Now, who was the hero of the USDA to me back in the day was Dan Laster. I don't know how many people remember Dan, but I remember Dan going to bat up on the hill in Washington, D.C. for $21 million. And he said, if you let us have the technology, bring that money to the Meat Animal Research Center in Clay Center, Nebraska, in a single focus effort, we will make the first genetic linkage map for cattle and for pigs. And he put himself out there. We're talking about risk takers. He put himself out there. And I always thought that was pretty brave. Larry Kundup and Dan Laster fighting for that money. And it wasn't very popular, was it, Daniel, that all that money went to Clay Center and didn't get distributed through the universities. But it turned out to be a very brilliant move because they assembled a team of people, which I was fortunate to be a part of, and they basically said, build the maps. So we built the systems to do it, and we spent all those hours in the lab, and we weren't allowed to travel. We weren't allowed to talk on the phone or do anything except make a map. And we wanted to be first, and we were first. In May of 1994, the genetic linkage map for cattle was published. And I'm sure that Steve Pappas, I didn't get to hear his talk last night, brought that up. And it was a very monumental, pivotal moment in the history of bovine gene mapping. Subsequent to that, there's a number of things that happened. So we had this euphoria, we've got a map, we've got microsatellites, companies jumping in, ABS included, I went over to ABS, we got involved with basically applying marker-assisted selection like Daniel mentioned. And it wasn't as easy as we thought. But then J.L. Lush actually told us it wouldn't be easy. We talk about, if you go back and look at the history of population and quantitative genetics in the notes of J.L. Lush, what did he say? He said that a trait was a combination of the pluses and minuses of differences across the genome. Okay? So the big idea that we could find single genes and everything that we're going to add up to the additive genetic variation from trait really became a little bit disillusioned. So we kind of spent a few years defining the maps, refining them. And then, as Daniel pointed out, there was a certain map, certain paper that came out in 2001 that was kind of a monumental, pivotal moment, and it gave us all hope again that if we have all these SNP markers, or all these markers across the genome, and apply them, that we can actually make this technology work. And off to the races we went. Now, it turns out that Illumina also paralleled all that and was developing its technology at the same time. And through the course of history of time, over the next few years, the chips were built and what have you, but there were some risk takers that I want to call out again today. Because they kind of fall away that people forget about who took the big chip, the big risk, and who made it happen. This didn't just happen by accident. Tim Smith, Mark Allen from the USDA were extremely important at Clay Center in developing it. This is Kurt Van Tassel and Ted Sonstegard and Lakshmi Mudakamali. Very important papers that they produced, and they were a part of this group. And I can't say enough about Jerry Taylor, who basically, as I've known him, has been a behind the scenes, out in front, I should say, leading in this technology development from the get-go. His assistant, Bob Schnabel, and the University of Alberta, Steve Moore. These are all key individuals at various universities and government institutions that we call out in our timeline as being very instrumental. At Illumina, there were three key individuals that have risen that I've identified. Cindy Lawley. Cindy is involved with our scientific accounts manager at the time. And Mary Lynn Munson. Those two work very closely together. And Christian Hottenschild. And basically, Cindy and Mary Lynn kind of put this consortium group of people together to build that first chip. And of course, they didn't do it alone. There's some real key self-support people that I also want to call out, and funding that had to come together to make this first chip, the bovine SNP50. Now, the original bovine SNP50 has now evolved into the second chip, or version 2, and here's some of the statistics, or combination of content on that particular chip. And this chip is going to go through another evolution. Now, you've heard Daniel talk about the various chips that he's been working with, the add-on chips, that the LD chips, and what have you. And through his company, markets various chips to the industry. And we also, around the globe, have people that are interested in a chip that's available on the open market that they can purchase and use in various other countries. So the version 3, we're calling out for people to join our, become an influencer or discussion on what that next version should look like. And I can say that the next chip, the 50K chip, so to speak, the bovine SNP50, will probably have more real estate on it, in terms of smaller bead size, and more samples will be able to run on this particular chip. So it will be extensive and expanded, and it will be publicly available so that anybody can run it globally. This is kind of the timeline. It shows from the beginning out through September 11, the last LD chip that we have out on the market for specific arrays from Illumina. And of course, Daniel has talked about some of the chips that derivations on the LD that they have done. There's two different pathways that we've been able to put chips together through the public and through private. We work with groups of people to either make the information available publicly or to contain some of that information, make some available publicly, some private, and combinations thereof, so that we can bring large groups of people together in building these chips. Now, genotyping, as you know, is just a lot of different things, whether it be for genetic merit, parentage verification, genomic selection. There's lots of different ways to implement this technology. And it has been done quite successfully up until date. At this point in time, our bovine SNP50 has been the backbone of over 2.3 million bovine samples that have been tested across our platform. And I think that's a fair number of animals to be tested already. But it's exponentially growing. Now, in I think it was 2007 at this BIF meeting, Jerry Taylor basically described the first bovine SNP 50, and it was published in the Angus Journal in 2008. And resulting in that is the Angus breed has been very aggressive in using the technology on its cattle today. This is a picture of a bull that sold last fall for over nearly $750,000 based on his genotype profile and his pedigree analysis. And at the Angus Association, thanks to Tanya Almond, she shared some information with me that suggests that from the first calibration in 12/10 of the date of the SNP 50 in the Angus breed to what's going to happen in mid-2014, we've gone from 2,400 animals to a database of 65,000 in that database. This would be the biggest database in the beef breed. As Daniel alluded to, this is going to be very important as this thing accelerates and becomes larger and larger, becomes more accurate, more predictive with the SNP markers in it for the various traits associated. That's a 27x increase in 4 years. And so other breeds are trying to identify how they can participate and grow their databases at the same level. Now, I want to thank Dorian Garrick for sharing a table with me. It kind of gives you an idea by breed. This is the ICAR breed symbol, and then the numbers of samples that he has had at the National Beef Cattle Evaluation Center come through his lab. And I use the Hereford bulls just to make Jack happy. He's with the Hereford Association, but there's about 10,000 Herefords, 22,000 some odd Simmentals, and so have you, what have you, that Dorian has shared information and genotypes also. And of course, there's the 2,000 bull project with the over 2,000 sires that have been genotyped and that information shared. And that database is growing rapidly. I think you've heard mention about this slide by Steve showed this slide last night. I wasn't able to see his talk, but this is the slide that shows the uptake in the dairy industry of the LD and the 50K combined. And these are cumulative numbers, and it's not up to date, but I'll have Kurt Van Tassel will be sending you that information. And basically, to date, as of about 10 months ago, we were at about 400,000 animals in the Holstein database that have been genotyped. So that's getting up there. That's the Holstein breed and its case. Now, in iCommunity newsletter, you can again find that at www.illumina.com and go to the agrigenomics section. We've been gathering up some stories from some of the early adopters of the 50K type data. And I call out a couple of operations. 44 Farms is an Angus operation down in Cameron, Texas. And they apply the technology and the selection of all their cattle and all bulls that go out are tested. And they also have a steak product or a meat product that they rely heavily on the testing. And I invite you to read that article from Bob McLaren. He's the owner of 44 Farms and the chairman of the Houston Astros. So Daniel, being a baseball fan, he would appreciate that. So, and also Three Trees Ranches down in Georgia, a big adopter of the genomic technology several years ago, converting a lot of their selection protocol over to use of the bovine SNP 50 technology. They are actually combining that with reproductive technologies such as isolating oocytes from puberal heifers, mating them and using IVF to basically rapidly change delta G genomics or genetic change, plus reducing generation interval, which is something that the Holstein Association has been able to show has been extremely significant in changing the genetic traits. So where are we heading? Where is Illumina heading? Well, you heard about this graph and the cost per genome for sequencing. So this is a publicly available piece of information. And as you can see, back when they did Menu, yeah, the Dominet Cow, I think they said it was, what, $50 million to do that, Daniel? And isn't it amazing that's not been so long ago? And today, the expected cost would be around $4,000. How many cattle could we have done? We would have waited. And it, a lot. And if we wait a little longer, we'll be doing a lot more. As Daniel knows, this thing is going down and down. This is what our Luminous portfolio really is all about, is the sequencing technologies that have been laid out to the industry. And I'm going to just give you a little glimpse of some of that. We just recently, this year, announced some new sequencing technology. We have the desktop MySeq, and the HiSeq is for the higher throughput. And this last January, announced the NextSeq. And basically, those two kind of, the NextSeq services both the low throughput and the high throughput needs, but it really reduces costs. And this tool is probably going to rapidly change how we go about genotyping, sequence-based genotyping methods. And I think when we look at what I mean by sequence-based genotyping, is to be able to multiplex different samples up to maybe 1,000 or more in a system, some type of a sequence-based system, and run it across the NextSeq, that will drastically reduce the price of genotyping in the future. We also introduced the product HiSeq 10X. That is initially come out in the human field, and this is the product that we talk about today as reducing the cost of genotyping, or basically sequencing the human genome to less than $1,000. And that, we initially, when they rolled this out, they were really proud. Back in January, Mark was there with me, Mark Mueller, and they were going to sell 5 of these. Just 5. $10 million a piece. And they've now exceeded that by 6-fold. People just started lining up then to buy the HiSeq 10X. Now, why is this important to us? Because basically everything that I've noticed in the genomic world has always come through the human field. We basically, there are technologies today behind the scenes, handheld DNA sequencers used in surgical rooms that are very target-specific for cancerous technology, cancer cells, and they're able to immediately biopsy, do an extraction right there in the surgical, in the room with the patient there, and determine what's going on in their hand. In the hand. It's experimental. So what does that say about the future? That says that the shoot side DNA technology has been born. It's there. And it will come. And I'm proud to work for a company that is a leader in this area. When they introduced the HiSeq 10X, we were all sitting there watching the program of a young man walking through the halls of technology. It was a very inspiring video to me, because what it demonstrated was, it was this young man walking through from the beginning up through the 10X, and all these technologies just continually unraveling and becoming available. So what is all these technologies coming together? Where are we going at Illumina? And what is my task with? We're looking at metagenomics, epigenetics, all kinds of things, pulling together more and more information. We're using the iCloud to basically accumulate apps, move data into the iCloud, the base space, and to be able to manipulate that data and analyze it and derive information from it. So, there have been a lot of successes, quick successes out of the gate. We won a couple of big races. We didn't do so well in the last race, but the races are not over. And there's a lot of fun times ahead, a lot of challenges. And we're only, we talk about this session as the emerging technologies. And one of the things I wanted to say, what is the best merging technology that I've ever seen? It's people's vision or people's dream. So if you can dream it, you basically can achieve it. So with that, I'll stop.